when I started on the project of Necess, we had like 30, maybe 30 sound effects. I've made, I think, around 400, 350 sound effects. So it's become much more immersive. You can hear animals when you wander around in the different environments. And you know, just the feedback you get as by playing the game, it's quite nice compared to before, which were like much more, maybe empty is the right word. Yeah.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Rune R.B. Eskilsson. My next guest is a media composer, sound designer, and drummer based in Denmark. He writes music and builds sonic identities across formats, from advertisements and podcast jingles to film scores, game music, and in-game sound design. He holds an MSc in strategic communication, which he applies to creative direction, collaboration, and clear audience-first storytelling. Recently, he's the composer and sound designer of the indie game title Necess, selling more than 2 million copies. His name is Rune R.B. Eskilsson, and he bridges classical training and cutting-edge tech to tell stories through sound. If you've ever wondered how music and sound design can shape emotion, imagination, and even player behavior, this episode will give you a fresh, behind-the-scenes perspective on how it's all done. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Rune R.B. Eskilsson.
Hey, Rune, thank you so much for joining me today. I was a little late myself this morning, so So I was just busy doing a whole bunch of stuff and just like lost track of time. I'm sure that happens. So
definitely. Here in Denmark, it's pitch black right now. It's evening and it's early. Winter almost. Yeah,
it gets dark early. Yeah, yeah, it's here too. I mean, it's not dark here yet, but but it will be, and it will be fairly early. I'm not a big fan of daylight savings, so
no.
Yeah, I don't know. You deal with it there too, don't you? Do you do daylight savings?
Yeah, so you change the hours, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
We went back
exactly. Yeah, we
one week ago.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think, we did that a couple of weeks ago, I don't like it either. But I think in the EU they are talking about, canceling it or something like that. At least at some point I heard someone talking about doing something about it, because it doesn't really make sense anymore. I guess back in the old day where you relied on the sun to be out when you needed to work out, I guess it made sense. But now, I mean...
Yeah, now it's just silly. And they talk about it in North America too. Talk about getting rid of it as well. So I don't know. I don't know when it's going to happen. Just
no.
People talk about it and never do anything about it.
Exactly.
As happens often.
Exactly. Yeah. And talking about getting like how do you say lost of out of track in terms of time. Because when it gets dark early, you're like, oh, is it that late? And then you know the hours go by and it's not really that late. And like.
It does strange things to your psyche. I don't know what it is. So, Yeah. So I want to start us off by asking you if you have an early memory of how sound moved you, because, you know, we're getting into time and sight, you know, as far as the darkness is outside. But we need to get into sound here.
Definitely.
Yeah. So can you tell me?
I mean, I've thought about that. And I think I may have a couple of you know, first sounds, so to speak, that I remember that kind of set the tone for the direction that I've been going to. So, I mean, I was introduced to sci-fi and especially Star Wars and Star Trek in a very early age. I think also in an early age that you maybe wouldn't want to watch those films, but my dad was
I don't know.
It's like
I don't think there's ever too early.
I agree. I mean, I wasn't harmed by it, but I mean, if you look at the PG ratings,
I'm a hopeless geek, so yeah. I love all those things, and I am here to tell you that, well, as far as I know, I have not suffered any detrimental effects from you know, seeing sci-fi early in my youth.
I totally agree, and I think I clearly remember watching Star Wars and all of the soundscapes that is in, you know, just that huge universe, you know, TIE fighters flying by, and evil Darth Vader, the scary sound. So that's kind of one element that took me in a direction.
But, well, sure. Also, that would actually put you in touch with some sounds that had never really been made before.
True.
Which is like they're just sounds that were made for the movie, like a lightsaber sound.
Yeah.
No one had ever done that before.
Exactly. That's
really
true. And in a very interesting way, to now you need to make something that it's a sword and it's made of light, and how does that even sound? Yeah, that's quite nice. And from what I recall, they were hitting like a vials on a what's it called, like an electrician or electrician tower or something like that, or they were hitting it with metal sticks
and then putting it through a fan.
Yeah,
they put it in front of a fan.
Yeah.
That was such an innovative way to do this. Yeah. Anyway, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, keep going. Yeah. So I mean, and that is, I love sci-fi and love watching it and interacting with it now. But I mean, a more romantic side of you know, the first sound for me was actually my dad playing music. Especially, he's a guitarist and have a studio as well. So often there would be bands in our home. And when I was a little kid, I remember, you know, all of these random people coming into the studio to record. And I clearly remember, you know, I was put to bed, but I could still hear them make music. And like, it was a vast different types of people, some metal, some more classical, some school projects or whatever. So I mean, not particularly one sound, but, you know, the essence of the music being made in the house, or around the house, So I think that's like the first kind of sound, so not one in particular, but
So did you say both of your parents were involved in music?
My mom is how do you say preschool teacher.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Okay.
But she also did play piano and stuff like that, but mostly my dad is a musician.
Wonderful.
That's nice.
It's so interesting to grow up in a house that has appreciation for music, even if they're not musical themselves. But if they are musical themselves, they definitely have that appreciation and
definitely.
The encouragement that you would have gotten to make your own music is very important in later development, too, because I think a lot of us are shaped by what our parents tell us is good and bad. Right? And if they're saying, oh, you can't make a living at that,
then
you just leave it, right?
Yeah,
you just don't do anything with it. I think a lot of people suffer from that, unfortunately. And music is such an expression of self that I find it so, I almost find it upsetting to hear of other people's childhoods where they were not encouraged to make music.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's sad. But I mean, yeah, for me, luckily, I had parents who supported and even, you know, just said, like, I played drums in an early age. So they sent me to the music school to play drums. My mom wanted me to play the cornet, that is like a smaller trumpet version. So she got involved in the local brass band and then, you know, sent me off to there and said, like, these are nice people. And we were all, you know, children growing up together, playing in the children brass band or child brass band. I'm not sure what you call that.
but sure, yeah.
Youth
yeah.
brass band, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, growing up with that. So, yeah. And also, like, I wanted to play cello at a time. So my dad, he arranged with the cello teacher to do some recordings for him. And then he would teach me as well.
The barter system. Gotta love that.
Yeah,
exactly. Gotta love that.
That's so nice. That's so nice. Yeah. And also because I only lasted 1 year playing cello, but...
oh, well. You know, some things you find are your thing and some things you find are not. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But so you were playing mostly classical stuff then for a while. How did you get into doing your own music?
So I went to... It's in Denmark, it's called efterskole in Danish. Okay. And that is like similar to a high school or college where you live abroad for 1 year between your, how do you say, preschool. And then when you go into what we call gymnasium, which may be your, I don't know, also high school-ish.
Okay. So how old were you around?
How old was I? 16-ish, 17-ish, yeah.
Sure.
It's like 10th grade, I think.
Okay.
It's like around that time.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, so it's something a lot of Danes do before they go into the gymnasium or high school or college or whatever you call it, before university, you know, like there's a gap in between. But yeah, when I went to this special school in Denmark that is only for classical music, and being there, being part of that, I played French horn at this time. I started, you know, to have ear training and music theory and all of that, which kind of led me on a path to try to make my own. I'm not sure, you know, where it sprung from, but I think I always been interested in doing music, and I've been, you know, putting together sample stuff where you could just plug and play in different music programs. So I started doing it back then. And then all the way through my high school or college or whatever you call it, I evolved doing more of it. I still played a lot of classical music. And I think also the classical music in me kind of also affected the way that I did music, or at least my understanding of it. But especially also, as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, the sci-fi and the movie universe. I love, you know, fantasy movies and Harry Potter, you know, stuff like that. And also listening to the music, Hans Zimmer, John Williams, all of those.
Yeah, the greats.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. And of course, like many more other composers as well. But yeah, just to name some of them.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. Quick question. Do you know anyone else who could benefit from hearing more about how powerful sound can be? If so, would you mind sharing this podcast with them? It would mean so much to me. Now, I'll stop interrupting and let you get back to the show.
So are you making like soundtracks for like film, are you thinking of? Or I know you're in gaming right now.
Yeah.
So how did that progress? Like, were you making stuff for like just singer-songwriter stuff? Were you making music for films? And then how did that get into gaming?
Yeah. So actually, I started by doing sort of classical music. I tried to do my own classical music. I was so ambitious. I wanted to start to write an opera. But I didn't finish it yet. Yeah, exactly.
That's big.
I wanted to do it. I was very motivated, and I told people about it and stuff like that.
How far did you get?
Not very far. Maybe a few pages or something like that. But yeah,
that's still huge.
I mean, if you only have two instruments playing, then But yeah.
Wow.
So that was kind of the start. But then later on, I started doing jingles for random stuff online. I started out on Fiverr doing music for people who wrote me. So I, that could be very, very much different many different things.
So for advertising or?
Yeah,
for...
but you know, people with their own projects. So, you know, a person with a podcast, for example, would then hire me to do an intro to the podcast. Or
sure, yeah, I've hired someone to do
exactly.
that.
Yeah, I had a teacher who wanted to. They were playing some game in her school class, and she wanted it to be driven by some music. So I mean, lots of different things. So it was kind of a student job. And then one of my friends told me that people like to have like epic music and stuff like that. So you should start doing that. So I said, okay, yeah, let me do that. So I did that. And then, you know, due to interest in film, I wanted to do something like that. So I started to get in a community with some directors for short films. And yeah, then it kind of went off that way. And then when I moved to Aarhus, where I'm living now, to study, we have this incubator for game companies. And I, also during my youth, I played a lot of video games and was also inspired by those making music for video games because of the immersiveness. I thought it was so awesome to just, you know, live in these universes and be immersed in the world, both with the sound effects, but also especially with the music.
Yeah, especially now that the ability of the music you can hear in these video games is getting so high.
Yeah, it's
so yeah, like the actual evolving. Production value in these are going way up. So yeah, it is almost like scoring a movie.
Definitely, definitely, and maybe even I don't know. I think it's you can compare it completely, but maybe even harder because there's so much more to do. Maybe the deadlines are less, you know, squished together because on a film you are very, very like just almost at the end of the film with the music you need to do, whereas in games maybe you're on the project for longer time. But yeah, then I started. I showed up at this incubator with game companies, and I was like, this is me. I do music. I want to do music for games. And then some of the guys there, they said, hey, we want to work with you. And we worked together for, you know, just as a hobby project. And then one day they got some funding. And then kind of the ball was rolling. They hired me. And yeah, I got to know, you know, a large community of game developers here in Denmark, especially. And that was kind of the path that led me that in that direction.
Sure. Was that Nesses or was that how you got to
That was
to
how
Nesses?
I got to Nesses, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
This was it's a game studio called Chop Chop Games, who are working on a rather large game now, actually a roguelite auto battler card game. But I'm due to time, I'm not on that project, unfortunately. But they are funded by Ghost Ship Games, who did what's it called? Deep Rock Galactic and Deep Rock Survivor, if you know those games. They are huge titles coming from Denmark. So yeah, that's quite nice.
Yeah, yeah, it's wonderful to see that being developed right where you are, because that's just so cool. There's so much that goes into the scoring for video games, though, that it kind of seems like it would be different for movies in that you're also designing are you also designing the sound, not just the music? Because the sound in these has to be all over, like you have to hear it from different angles, you have to be aware of how someone would walk and what they're walking on, and the UI sounds of the menu in the, like there's a whole lot that goes into this. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I for Nesses and a lot of the games that I've worked on previously, I also did the sound design, which is it's a hard thing to do because it's a lot of work doing the music. Especially for Nesses, I've made over 60 tracks for the game, of like 2 to 4 minutes in length. But then also having to do the sound design. But I think, yeah, I like the way that, because you make the game so much more immersive. When I started on the project of Necess, we had like 30 sound effects. I've made, I think, around 400, 350 sound effects. So it's become much more immersive. You can hear animals when you wander around in the different environments. And you know, just the feedback you get as by playing the game, it's quite nice compared to before, which were like much more, maybe empty is the right word. Yeah,
it's funny that sound is one of those things that we don't notice unless it's bad.
Yeah, exactly. And I haven't gotten really like much feedback about the sounds. So, I mean, I think that's a good thing.
People must get immersed into the game, which exactly. I guess is the point, exactly. Right?
Yeah. When I tested out all of the sound, I did some, you know, videos where I was just wandering around for 15, 20 minutes, not doing anything, just experiencing the environment. And that's quite nice, especially because Necess is a 2D top-down game. You know, to get that immersiveness, that's quite nice.
Yeah. So from the sound design of the game to the UI or UX experience of the menu items and things like that, like how do you design good sounds for a menu? Because that's got to be, well, difficult in the sense that people are going to be using that thing so many times that you can't make it annoying.
You're so right. I mean, the thing that we did was to keep it simple. So we actually just have one sound, which is like a tick sound when you press buttons, which makes it, you know, it's a sound that is in frequencies, not annoying to listen to.
You get feedback, so you know you're doing something.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's similar to a mouse clicking sound. But it's the only thing that you will hear. If not only when you are turning up and down the volume, you will hear what you're turning up. If it's sound design or music, you will hear a bit of music. But that is the only thing that we have done, for example, in Necess, just to, as you say, not make it annoying, because people are spending a lot of time in these menus, especially in a game like Necess, where you have to handle a lot of stuff and be crafting and doing sorting and all those things. So that was kind of the approach.
Sure. Have you worked on other games besides Necess? I know that Necess is the biggest one.
So I've worked on a couple. A short, very small one called Mine Ralph. It's an arcade game, I think it's called, where you are this small rock, and your girlfriend is taken from you, and you then have to fight your way through the evil robots who are mining the ground.
That sounds adorable.
Yeah, it's quite cool. It's quite nice. But so it's similar to Super Meat Boy, I think. And it's so damn hard. And I mean, without cheats, I cannot like come past some of the first level, because it's just hardcore. But then you wander your way around, and there's a lot of assignments that you have to do, and you get powers as you go along. So I did the sound design and music for that. Which also
was
quite
different from Necess. Like when you were like, obviously the thing that you are is different.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, also so the similar thing is that it's both electronic music in these two games. But I think so in Mind Ralph, we also kind of used some adaptive music. So because you gain speed if you are like going down a hill or something like that, or a hole. So if you have high speed, the music will change into different adaptive layers. Whereas in Necess, it's not so much adaptive as it is just, regular music soundtrack playing the same looping.
Like environmental.
Yeah, exactly. And so we have a few places where we do have some immersiveness where it changes from, like, if you're fighting a boss and the boss is evolving, you also have a new track for the new involvement of the boss. But other than that, it's very linear. But for Minecraft, but also I think it was very mechanical. So you have these robots and the robots are mechanical and you can kind of see their gears and all of that. And
so deliberately so.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it was a little bit sci-fi also. So that was a different, you know, sound in terms of that, where in this sense it was more, you know, it's fantasy and we have fantasy, but we also have mine carts and like shotguns and whatever. So it's like it's a little bit of a mixture, but it doesn't have to be something that you kind of know. Whereas in the other one we kind of knew what we were going to.
Hi. This is Joshua Sui, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. If you want to understand how to harness that power in your own life, please keep listening.
The last project that I've worked on recently, which unfortunately got cancelled, but then evolved into the new project that I mentioned before that ChopChop is doing. So that was like a dystopian world sci-fi thing. Also an auto battler, but that was actually mainly symphonic music, but again it was sci-fi, so I was able to design a lot of sounds that people did not hear before. Like if I wanted this specific thing to sound like what I thought was the right sound, then I could do that because no one knew what it was, or you know, like if it gave the right feedback, then that was perfect.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating how games are made sound wise. Mm. I mean, all wise, really.
Definitely.
But you're a board member of Game Audio Denmark, right?
Yeah.
So, what are the trends that you've seen in how games are using sound in a way? Maybe not even the ones that you've worked on, but how is it developing? And actually, to add on to that, are a lot of them using voice actors these days, or they're just not doing that?
So I've talked to a lot of my colleagues in Denmark of audio design who use a lot of voice recording and spend a lot of time setting up nice systems with the voice actor, so you're able to actually make it easier for yourself, but also for the actor doing it. I think in Denmark particularly, we have a lot of creative products that's also working into, you know, what's it called? Where you have your phone and you kind of see the world in front of you through your phone.
Oh, like the Pokemon game.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that. And I think...
What do they call that? It's not virtual reality, I guess. It's something else. I can't remember what they call it.
AR, maybe?
Yeah. Augmented reality.
Yes. That's right. Yeah, exactly. So I've seen some examples of that. And I think that's pretty cool. And also, you know, when you have your phone and you need your phone to make sound that is immersive, or you have then it's headphones, of course it's better, but it's interesting to see with what can you do with a phone with the sound coming out of the phone, which is also getting better, you know, the technology in phones. I think in terms of trends, that is, you know, the most part from what I see. Like people try to make immersive worlds that are standing out more than just being, you know, if you use a Unity to make something or make it more creative, making your own world, make it hand drawn instead. And one of the games that is being developed here in Aarhus is Out of Words now, and that is a cool project.
It's called Out of Words.
Out of Words, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can send you a link afterwards. And
sure.
Yeah.
Really interesting. And you said it's claymation? Is it like...
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so fantastic.
They animate everything and then put it into the game.
So all done by hand.
Yeah.
By human hands.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm now amazed, especially since the next question that I'm going to ask you has to do with AI, of course.
Yeah.
You know, like how much impact are you seeing that make on the industry right now? And is it sound-wise, visual-wise, like is it replacing or are people just using
it? So I think, you know, there in Denmark, our pro organization just launched a huge lawsuit against Suno for copywriting artists like Aqua, who are, you know, I'm a Barbie girl and stuff like that.
As far as I understand, Denmark is the first country in the EU to put forth a bill to copyright voice and likeness.
Yeah, which, that's definitely another thing.
Thank you very much.
Exactly. That's what that means for us is that, you know, if you have a phone call and someone is recording it, it's illegal if they record it, you know, without your permission and then also to use it.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.